bet you do the
Abe Lincoln.
So do the
Abe.
Do the
Abe Lincoln.
So do the
Abe.
Do the
Abe Lincoln.
Preserving the Union, not hurting the South.
And we're live.
Hello, and welcome back to a We Should Actually Be Discussing Brave Instead of This Piece of Shit episode of the First Time Watchers podcast.
Because we love to watch awesome movies that Tim probably doesn't like now.
My name is Tim Costa, and with me are...
Walter Vinci.
Hermano da Silva. Throwing you off your game, son.
What we'd like to do on the FTW podcast is find a movie that neither of us have seen. I'll watch it together and then discuss. These movies could be new, they could be old, or something that is on all of our lists of shame. In this episode, we will be discussing Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter. But before we get into that, it's time for Yay or Nay. This is the part of the show where we discuss what each of us have recently seen on our own. Walter.
I, last night, actually watched Alien, the 1979 cut.
Great movie.
It is still great.
Uh-huh. Was that to cleanse your own palate of Prometheus?
No, it wasn't. Well, yes and no. It was... I wanted to see, like, you know, since we just saw Prometheus not too long ago, a lot of it's still fresh in my head, like the imagery and like other things. And so I went back and watched Alien, and it was actually really cool to after seeing Prometheus, watching Alien, it's actually really awesome because you get to see like things from Prometheus, like the donut ship, and
wait, what's really awesome?
Seeing the donut ship crashed on the planet when the Nostromo gets there.
Okay, so you're saying having that perspective now?
Yeah, exactly. Seeing like the ship before in the prequel.
So you're saying it adds to the movie Alien?
It does, actually. Oh. It has a certain amount of extra flavor.
And so does it change your opinion about Prometheus?
No.
Okay.
But then, like, seeing the space jockey in the cannon navigator.
Yes.
And like seeing that again, like seeing that earlier, like what it's actually supposed to do.
Right.
In Prometheus, that was pretty awesome. Like, uh-huh. Like, oh, you know, did you notice the space jockey? And he's, you know, got the, he still gets kind of remnants of the helmet on. Mm-hmm. So, and the movie still holds up as far as story and pacing goes. Yeah. And I just recently picked up the Alien Quadrilogy box set.
Nice.
Over at Best Buy. It was on sale for $20.
Awesome.
What a
deal.
Yes, sir. So I was reading the little pamphlet that comes with it, and there's actually panel notes written by Ridley Scott. It says there is no director's cut. He's actually completely happy with the theatrical release.
Of
and
Alien.
The quote-unquote director's cut that's on the disc is he took some of the scenes out and then kind of extended some other scenes to kind of give an alternate version of Alien.
Yeah.
But he still stands by his original 1979 cut, which I thought was pretty awesome.
That's good.
So that's what I ended up watching, not the director's cut.
Speaking of director's cut, have you ever seen the director's cut of Aliens?
Not yet. I'm getting to that.
Don't bother.
No, I'm going to go with the original cuts because that's what, you know... There's another one where he's talking about Alien Cubed in the show notes, and it basically says that if there is no Alien Cubed director's cut, because if there would, then the director would have to go back and reshoot the whole entire
movie. I don't think David Fincher wants to go back. And
I don't think he does either at all. But I will give it a wholehearted yay. And if you can get this box set cheaply like I did, do yourself a favor, go out and buy it. It's certainly worth every penny.
Yeah, even though Alien Resurrection isn't that great of a movie, there are some good sequences in it.
Yeah, and there's little featurettes for all the discs.
Sure.
When you extend it, I mean, like, this table is, like, probably, what, like, 3 or 4 feet long. It would go from end to end of the table.
Nice. Wow.
It's a giant book.
Wow, that's cool.
So, yeah, highly recommended. Yay for Alien 1979 all the way.
Is that all you have to mention?
That's all I got to mention for now.
Okay. Hermano.
All right, I got three movies. First one is The Innkeepers.
Uh-huh.
Ty West movie. I believe it came out last year, 2011, maybe?
Okay.
Do you have the synopsis up there? You want me to...
Keep going.
Basically, the plot is basically there's a historic hotel that is going to be shutting down, and there's only two employees left, a guy and a girl. And I guess throughout the years they've been working there, there's been this like ghost story surrounding the hotel, and they've never had the guts to do anything about it, look into it at all. And now in the final days of the hotel being open, they finally get, you know, figured, like, they better, might as well do it and, you know, see if there's anything to this ghost story. So basically that's the whole plot. They get some kind of, microphones and stuff like that. They don't have any fancy equipment or anything like that. Mostly just recording devices.
So it's like a haunted house story?
Pretty much. It's very, it's not a fancy ghost story. It's a very, like... simple story, but I think the movie is actually pretty good. It's a good throwback to like classic, like maybe 70s or 80s, like haunted house movies.
That's interesting you say that because it is directed by Ty West, who also directed the movie we will be discussing next week, The House of the Devil.
Yes.
So
without saying too much about one or the other, because what I want to say kind of will maybe give away something of the other movie, so I won't say too much, but I will say yay on the movie, especially if you like a simpler story and classic scare moments.
Okay, good. Sounds good.
So, yeah, yay on that one. The second movie I watched was The Silent House, which I also believe came out either last year or the year before.
Yes. You're talking about the Spanish original?
Yes.
From 2010.
Okay.
Directed by Gustavo Hernandez.
And basically, the way I heard about this film, and I think it's this film's claim to fame, is that they claim to have the whole movie is shot in a single shot. It's a relatively short movie. It's
86 minutes.
86 minutes, yeah. And the entire movie is supposedly shot in one shot. Now, there are a couple times where I thought there could have been cuts.
Similar to Rope.
Well, ropes are a little more easier
to
see. Sure. But in this movie, there's at least two times where the screen goes completely black, like you're in a dark room or something like that. And there easily could have been a cut there. You just don't know. So you pretty much got to, you know, take the director's word for it that, you know, it really was shot in one shot. But going into the movie, it was the main reason I wanted to see the movie, because I thought that'd be quite impressive if they shot a single 86-minute shot. After watching the movie, I was not very impressed, because as amazing as that may sound to some people, the movie's actually very boring at times.
Oh, wow.
Because, I mean, when you think about it, there's nothing fancy to it. It's a lot of follow shots. It's following this girl.
Like third-person perspective behind her?
Yeah, just behind her, just following her. I mean, there's really nothing fancy to it. I mean,
are there any good scares in it?
Not really. I mean, the movie's... I really don't even know what I can say without being, like, spoilery. But let's just say that there's a twist in it. The twist is very blah.
Hmm.
I mean, it's not earned. It's just thrown in there. You're like, where the hell is this coming from? And the other thing that hurts the movie a little bit is that there's only three characters in the entire movie.
Yep.
So there's not much story. There's not much dialogue. It's a lot of quiet moments. I don't know. I thought it was kind of boring. I'd say check it out if you're interested in seeing what a single take movie would look like. But other than that, it's not overly scary. It's supposed to be, I think, a scary movie. And
now, it's interesting. This movie was remade the following year, in 2011, starring Elizabeth Olsen, and written by the same director as the original, although directed by two different people. Would you have any interest at all in seeing the remake?
I would. Are they still claiming that it's a single take?
Well, I don't know about claiming, but it does follow the same format, yes.
Honestly, if it follows the same exact story, I don't see how they could do it without doing it as a single take, because it's very, very simple. It's
I'm saying that they did do that in what looks like a single take as well, yes.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I didn't think it was overly a good movie. I thought it was very, I'd say below standards for like, you know, I compare it to The Innkeepers, because The Innkeepers is a ghost story as well, very similar to this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But The Innkeepers was, I think, a much, much better movie because there were cuts and because there were fancier shots. And it was just a little more exciting. This other movie was very boring. It was just... I honestly caught myself falling asleep a few times.
Interesting, the movie you saw, Silent House, the Spanish original, has a 5.4 user rating on IMDb, and the remake is a 5.3. So... I guess a lot of people are following your point of view.
I wouldn't recommend it. I mean, it's just okay. I mean, it's interesting to see what it would look like, but it's not worth, even as short as it is, not worth spending the time, really,
right.
In my opinion.
So you say nay.
Nay on that one.
Now, I am interested in what movie you have to mention next.
Yeah, your third movie.
My third movie. I'm a man of my word. I said I would do it, and I rewatched the Inglourious Basterds.
And
I have to admit, I liked it a lot better on the second watch.
There you go.
Very good.
I still think there are problems with it, and it's a lot of the same problems that I thought there were before. A lot of the scenes go on way, way too long.
Hmm.
And I know that's some of the stuff that people actually admire about the movie, is that there are all these long dialogue scenes. But the scene in the pub, the the famous scene where everyone dies. Yeah. That scene goes on way too long. Oh my god. Dude, I honestly was keeping track, and it felt like it was like half an hour.
But it was so interesting. Every piece of dialogue, every
not
sentence...
everything. When they first get in there, I don't think it's interesting at all. There's a bunch of Germans at a table. They sit down at another table. It's like the most mundane conversation.
But the stakes are so high.
The stakes don't get high until like at least 15
because
to 20
you know
minutes
why
into that
they're
scene.
Going. You know why they're going in there.
Yeah, but it's very mundane conversation until the Germans start interrupting their table and start sitting around them, and they're like, "Holy shit, we're in danger."
It may be mundane conversation, but they still have to accomplish their mission. So you're as you're watching this unfold, you're wondering how are they gonna talk about this without the other Germans getting involved and all that kind of stuff.
I didn't get that until the senior officer walks into the picture. Until he comes in, which is like 15 minutes into that whole scene, then the stakes are raised, then I'm interested. From that point on, I'm like, all right, how are they going to get out of this? Before that, they're just sitting around trying to figure out how to get this dude away. And at first, they're even not trying to get him away.
Yeah,
they're just talking to him.
They're also, I love the dialogue of the game. And the symbolism of the game as well, because of the characters that they have on their forehead, on the cards on their forehead. You know, obviously it's related to the whole German philosophy with the characters that they choose, and they describe who the characters are. And all that is just underplayed by this extreme tension, because you're just wondering, how is this going to play out?
The reason I love that scene, not because of the length, is because the game... How do I say this? The very game they're playing is like pretty much like trying to figure out who this person is on their forehead.
Yes.
When you see the difference between them playing a game and then when that senior officer comes in, you see them really playing a game, and that's when there are stakes, because you're like, if he figures out who they are, they're gonna die.
Right.
Or they're gonna, you know, at very least, you know, get found out and whatever. But I still don't love that scene. I still don't love Brad Pitt in it. I really think he sticks out way too much. But I liked him a little better this time. I stood by what I said before. I love the beginning of the movie. I love the way the movie ends. It's just some of the stuff in the middle is really, really boring. And this is not a movie that you can watch like all the time. It's really long. It's like 2.5 hours long.
I think it has strong rewatchability.
How many times have you seen it?
Well, probably about 3 times.
I've seen it twice, and I honestly think this is one of those movies that I can maybe watch like once every 5 to 10 years.
Oh,
that's
wow. I disagree. Wally, do you remember, when was the last time you saw this?
I haven't seen it in a couple of months, but I do, the movies that I really like, and this is one of those I actually really liked, I'll watch fairly frequently when I'm in the mood for something like, and it's going to sound bad when I say it, when I want to watch something fun, because I find Inglourious Basterds to be nothing more than like it's a fun movie.
Right.
You know what I mean? With some of the, you know, the snappy comebacks and
so much to take out of it.
There's a lot like, I can walk away with, you know, like the whole like Gorlami. Gorlami. You know, scene.
Yeah.
And I cracked every time I see it. I really think it's probably,
I think it's a masterpiece.
It's probably my favorite Tarantino piece.
Yes, I agree.
And right below that would be like Pulp Fiction.
I think that movie should have won Best Picture that year. I can't say enough good things about it. It was nominated for Best Picture, but was that a year, 2010? Yeah, there were 10. That's right. That was the movie.
And when I think it's the Hurt Locker.
The Hurt Locker one. So, you know, in A Serious Man, in Education, Avatar, District 9,
yeah.
Precious, The Blind Side, up in the air. So... Anyways,
so that'd be a yay or nay there, Hermano.
I'll say yay this time.
Hooray!
Yay!
Yeah, I liked it better this time.
I give you credit for being a man of your word. Was there anything else you wanted to mention?
No, that's it.
Okay, I have a lot to talk about because it has been a little while since we did record, so I had a lot to watch. I saw the 2007 Rob Zombie remake, Halloween. Has any?
I've not seen it yet.
Yes.
You've seen this?
I've seen it.
I found it really boring. You know, it's really odd choice for him to... Because Rob Zombie, you know, wrote the screenplay and directed, of course, and it's really odd choice to have so much of the beginning of the movie focus on a young Michael Myers. And I don't think there's really any reason to give me that story. You know, it takes all the creepiness out of the character. And it really made me appreciate the original Halloween a lot more. Because just based on the fact that you have no idea why Michael Myers is insane, it makes that movie all that much better. And of the three major slasher films of the 80s, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, and Halloween, Halloween has always been my least favorite. I've always appreciated it, but I was able to appreciate it a lot more based on this remake. The script is awful. What's his name? Plays Dr. Loomis. Malcolm McDowell is terrible in this movie. He just completely phones it in. And I think the one thing that made... Who played the original Dr. Loomis?
The other one with the...
It's on the tip of my tongue.
God. Oh, Donald Pleasance.
Yes.
His performance was so great because it was so serious, you know? And I don't know. I just didn't like this movie. I really like House of a Thousand Corpses and House Devil's Rejects. I think those are really genuinely gritty, creepy horror movies and original at the same point. And they also pay homage or respect to the slasher films of the 70s. But this is just uninspired, you know. I don't know. I have to say nay. Nay on it. Hermano, do you remember seeing it?
It was a while ago, yeah. But I mean, I remember actually liking it. I didn't mind the backstory. I mean, he tried something different. I think he wanted to do something more than do a straight remake.
Yeah, didn't
like he wanted to give a little backstory. I don't remember not liking it. I haven't seen the second one, and mostly because I heard that, you know, it's Michael Myers without his mask on, and I'm like, dude, you don't take Michael Myers' mask on. That's like his most that's like taking away Freddy's claws. That's like taking away Jason's mask. You don't do it. So I don't know what, like, I don't agree with that choice, but I don't totally necessarily disagree with showing his, like, backstory a little bit.
Okay. Anyways, that was an A for me. The next movie I watched was The Battle of Algiers. This is a French New Wave film from 1966, directed by Guillaume Pontecorvo. The Netflix summary gives a real good synopsis, and if it sounds interesting to you, then I would recommend it. One of the most influential films in the history of political cinema, The Battle of Algiers focuses on the events of 1957, a key year in Algeria's struggle for independence from France. Shot in the streets of Algiers in documentary style, the film vividly recreates a tumultuous Algerian uprising against the occupying French. The violence soon escalates on both sides in this war drama that's still astonishingly relevant. And I agree with that. It is still very relevant, very prescient of today even. It's an event that I don't think many people are aware of. You know, I've never heard of this occupation of Algeria from France before. I like the way it was shot in black and white. It had a very gritty feel. Some of the tone of it kind of reminded me of Schindler's List. Maybe Spielberg could have been an influence for him. And like I said, if the synopsis sounds interesting, I would definitely recommend it. It's not for everybody. It may bore people, but I say yay.
All right.
I watched Luther, which is a British television show starring Idris Elba, who I have kind of a man crush on. And he plays a suicidal detective on the London police force. He's great at his job and is able to profile killers better than anyone, of course, you know. And Idris Elba is great in the show. I watched two seasons. The first season is only 6 episodes. The second season is only 4 episodes. So it's really like an extended movie.
How long are the episodes?
Like
an hour?
No, a little less than an hour. And the arc of his character and the supporting characters, great, very interesting. You know, there's been tons of shows about cops with psychological problems, but this one is very well scripted and well acted. There's no fluff in it at all. It's all meat, and all you have to do is commit 2 or 3 nights, and you can get through all 2 seasons, and it'll definitely be worth it. So I say yay. All
right.
And finally, I saw the The Killing on AMC. I was able to finally see the season 2 finale that wrapped up the murder investigation that began in season 1. The finale was worth the wait, even though we discovered the main culprit in the second to last episode. There was a final twist that I did not see coming. Everything wrapped up very well, and there were some good emotional moments. You know, there was some gripes about the way the first season ended, and I was a bit confused as to why they decided to do that. But, you know, both seasons are written very well. The second season does drag on for a couple of episodes, I think. There's one storyline that I didn't like at all. I didn't find it very interesting. But other than that, I still think it was very well acted. You know, still, and they did a great thing in the second season. At the end of each episode, there were cliffhangers that really got you wondering, oh, where is this going to go now? Season 3 is still undecided. I doubt that they'll pick it up because the ratings for the second season were not good at all. But, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing where it goes, especially if one person in particular comes back and they actually wrap up that investigation in one season, you know. So I say yay for The Killing, especially the first season. Very enjoyable. And that's all I was able to watch.
And now a word from our sponsor. We would like to thank Air for sponsoring us. Without Air, we would not live. Thank you, Air, for sponsoring this segment and keeping us alive. Air, it's for everyone!
Now it's time for Trailer Hitches. This gives us an opportunity to mention a movie trailer that we have seen that either gets us on board for an upcoming movie or makes us want to bitch. Hermano.
I caught a trailer for the movie Beasts of the Southern Wild. Mm-hmm. This movie looks amazing to me. I mean, the trailer grabbed me right away. Do you have the synopsis there?
Faced with her father's fading health and environmental changes that release an army of prehistoric creatures called Aurochs, 6-year-old Hush Puppy leaves her Delta community home in search of her mother?
Okay. Yeah. Wow, that's even crazier than I thought the movie was going to be.
Is this animated?
No, it's not. It's it's live action. At least from the trailer, I got a sense that it looks like I'm getting a definite Tree of Life vibe from it.
Uh-oh.
Like a lot of the camera movements and just, you know, it centers around like this little girl and her father. And I think, I don't know if the movie necessarily takes place in Louisiana, but I think the storm might be Hurricane Katrina. I'm not sure if it's ever mentioned in the movie, but it looks like a total fantasy. Like the little, there's like, it follows a little, little girl and her, I think she's motherless and she just lives with her dad in this place called the Bathtub.
Okay.
And basically the storm, like they're where they live is just flooded with, like, you know, insane amounts of water, and
it was filmed in New Orleans.
Yeah. And they refuse to leave where they live even under, you know, the circumstances, you know, they're faced with. And I guess, you know, where the fantasy comes in is like it looks like there was like a giant pig or a giant boar, and I mean it looks just like amazingly shot. It just looks like a really I'm not sure if the story's gonna hold up, but I mean the movie looks really, really good, and I don't know, I can't wait to see it.
Oh, that's cool. Walter?
I'm gonna trailer hitch on the movie Flight, starring Denzel Washington.
Directed by Robert Zemeckis.
Yeah. So
an airline pilot saves a flight from crashing, but an investigation into the malfunction reveals something troubling.
Yeah, in the trailer they say what it is, he's an alcoholic.
Okay.
In the trailer, and it looks like one of those movies where it's basically him trying to conquer his own, you know, past demons, because basically one of the things that they say in the trailer is that we've tried the simulation with, you know, a bunch of different pilots, and every single time that we tried it, that everyone died. The only person that could have landed this plane was you. Hmm. And they show, like, parts of the crash, and I gotta say that if I'm in a crisis and Denzel Washington is there, I will feel so safe, because he just stays like totally level headed, like he's, you know, the co-pilot's like losing his mind, he's like, we're going into a dive, and he's like okay, and I'm like, oh, I'm we're going to a dive, right, you're gonna get us through this, Denzel, you bet, and then he apparently rolls the airplane upside down to avoid hitting a bunch of houses, and you actually see that roll at the very end of the trailer. I'm gonna go see it because I mean it was enough to get me, you know, intrigued.
It kind of sounds like a mix between, I don't know, like the Sully landing the plane in the Hudson, and all these stories you hear of drunk airline pilots.
Yeah, it looks like a cross between the two of them. I thought it looked really good. I mean, the theme song, the music they put in the trailer is the Rolling Stones' "Gimme Shelter."
Okay.
which is, you know, really sets up, you know, the trailer for me. So I was like, you know, every time it comes on, I get a big smile on my face. I'm like, I can't wait for it to come out.
This is interesting because it's being released in November, at the beginning of November. So this is right in the middle of Oscar season. Does it have that feel of Oscar bait movie?
No, I mean, I'll have to say that when I actually see it. Okay. It doesn't. The trailer itself doesn't lend itself to being Oscar bait. Mm-hmm. It looks like one of those, like, you know, stories about a person who's got, you know, who's got troubles, but apparently is just really good at what they do.
Well, sounds like Oscar bait to me.
I don't know. I mean, I'm gonna hold that one in reserve until I actually see the movie. But I will totally hitch up on this trailer.
Okay. I saw the trailer for Wreck-It Ralph, the bad guy character in a classic game who longs to be a hero brings trouble to his entire arcade after sneaking into a new first-person shooter game and unleashing a deadly enemy. This is an animated movie by Disney, and it is pretty cool to see in the trailer classic video game characters like Bowser and one of the ghosts from Pac-Man,
and Sakai, Bison from Street Fighter.
So it's really cool that they were able to get these licenses for these classic games and use them. You know, although in the trailer, you know, they use this modern music. I don't remember the name of the song, but it's just a hit now. You know, and I didn't know if it really fit with the tone of the movie, but. You know, of course, the voice actors are great. John C. Reilly and Jane Lynch and Sarah Silverman, Brandon T. Jackson, Dennis Haysbert, the president. So hell yeah. So, you know, it has a good voice cast, but I'll hitch my wagon to it with reservations because it looks, I don't know, it didn't fully grasp me. Now, I still have some reservations as to whether or not this is actually going to be worth it or just going to kind of cash in on pop culture knowledge. You know,
I'm actually going to try to get my hands on that movie poster from the theater itself. It's of an 8-bit screaming Wreck-It Ralph, which is going to go in my dining room.
That's pretty cool. And you can play the game online. It's called Fix-It Felix. And Wreck-It Ralph is the bad guy in it, and the video game is like an old 8-bit kind of combination Rampage, Mario, Donkey Kong.
Uh-huh.
And I played it. It's fun. So Wreck-It Ralph.
There you go.
Okay. That does it for trailer hitches, and it's now time to move on to our review of Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter.
Woohoo!
Based on the 2010 novel by Seth Graham Smith, this movie, directed by Timur Bekmambetov, tells the story of Abraham Lincoln, the 16th president of the United States, as he discovers vampires are planning to take over the United States and makes it his mission to eliminate them. This novel was a popular follow-up to Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, which placed the familiar horror trope in the classic Jane Austen novel. Of course, in this book and film, vampires are placed in the mid-1800s and provide the motivation for Mr. Lincoln's actions. Now, I have two questions that first go to Hermano, who has read the book.
Yes.
Is this a faithful adaptation of the popular Grahamsmith novel? And regardless of how faithful the movie is to its source material, does it make you believe that the man who would free the slaves could also free us from vampires?
All right. First, no, it's not really faithful to the book. The book was played very straight. I would compare the book to being, take any book ever written about everything that Abe Lincoln did and insert vampires to it. It was that accurate. Like, there was nothing in Abe Lincoln Vampire Hunter that was out of this world other than vampires being added to it.
The book.
Yes, the book. Now, I can see why they did the movie the way they did, because the book is, there's not a lot of action in the book. There's not, like, a lot of axe swinging and fiery trains and like jumping off of horses and
so stuff how like that. How in the book do they describe the action or how he eliminates vampires?
He's all right. I don't know how much you want to get into this, but in the book it's very straightforward. He's never trained by Henry the Vampire. He's self-trained. He's described in the book as a wiry, tall, just very strong man.
Okay.
he's just powerful on his own. Like, Henry never trains him in the book. Secondly, Henry's barely in the book. He meets him in the beginning, and I think Henry's at the end, and he occasionally writes him. So Henry's much more featured in the movie than in the book. They added all those action beats because if they didn't, the movie would have been very boring. Not boring, but it wouldn't have lived up to the title Abe Lincoln Vampire Hunter. I mean, the book was recommended to me. I had no interest in the book because I was like probably like most people, Abe Lincoln Vampire Hunter, that sounds stupid. But the book was actually really good.
So does he hunt vampires in the novel?
The way the movie starts out, it's exactly the way the book starts out. His mother is murdered by vampires because his father couldn't pay, like, some kind of, like, a protection fee or something like that.
Okay.
Something to that effect. After that, the movie completely strays from the book. They added a bunch of action elements to because otherwise they would have been playing it completely straight, and people going into the movie would have complained that, wow, this is not what I expected.
Okay.
Going into the book, I totally expected the movie, but I got a good book instead.
Interesting.
So I was happy for the book. I just thought the movie was okay.
You thought the movie was okay. Now, how did you go into the movie?
I had
seen the trailers.
Yes.
And did you expect a lot of action?
I did from the trailers. I mean, just from looking at the trailer, I was like, whoa, that's not in the book.
Uh-huh.
Hey, that's not in the book either. I'm like, all right, I'm still interested because I did like the book, but I felt like if I hadn't read the book, I would really not like this movie. But I'm thankful that I did read the book, and I know that there is a good version of this movie out there somewhere.
Okay. Walter?
I liked the movie, actually.
You like it?
I liked it.
Okay.
I think it needed more action beats. Because about right after, probably about maybe the halfway through the movie, it slows down completely and there's no action beats. It's just a lot of, like, historical, you know, fact about, you know, Lincoln campaigning for the White House and all that, where he's actually not doing any sort of vampire fighting. And up, you know, not until the very end where there's the, you know, the whole final battle with the vampire lord. I went into this movie expecting a lot more action, especially from a guy like Timur Bekmambetov, because he did two of my favorite movies about vampires, Night Watch and Day Watch,
mm-hmm.
which if you haven't seen them, I highly recommend you do. They're awesome. He also directed Wanted, which was also great in my opinion, as far as action goes. So the guy knows how to do fight scenes. He knows how to do shootouts. He knows how to like really get that like that crazy over the topness that I like in my action movies. And he does it really well. I actually went out and bought an axe, another one, so that I could practice in my backyard, spook my neighbors.
nice.
I'm actually getting pretty damn good with it, actually.
Just in case the vampires come.
Just in case anybody comes, because if I come spinning that thing around the corner, you're not gonna think twice. I liked it. I wish I had more action beats, and especially toward like the middle part of the movie where it could really use a little bit more. A little more action.
Is there anything else you both want to mention before we get to what I have to say?
I can think of.
There were a few things in the movie that I thought were clever because I hadn't really seen them in movies before, especially about vampires, where they brought up the point in the movie that vampires can't kill other vampires.
Yes.
I'd never really seen that. And done in a vampire movie before, so I thought that was a nice little addition that wasn't in the book necessarily, because in the book vampires could kill other vampires. So that's another way where the movie strayed a lot from the book. And also what the book did that I thought was really clever is that it was pretty much they played it straight, where I think the movie tried to do both. They tried to play it straight and then they also tried to be completely outrageous with scenes, which I think hurt it, because they should have just picked one or the other. If they were going to go completely crazy with vampires throwing horses at people, then they should have just gone completely off the wall. I think they tried to do both, and I think that's what really makes the movie seem boring at times, because you can't give somebody an action beat like running across horses and then completely slow it down to the pace the book was written in. Because obviously it's going to seem like, holy crap, there's nothing in the
middle. You mean after that scene?
Yeah, because, yeah. I mean, when movies do that, of course it's going to seem like, hey, there was this boring part in the movie. Because, I mean, you go from running across horses to a pretty much straight adaptation of the book. And then go to, like, a Civil War scene where there's, like, you know, soldiers charging at each other. And then, like, a train scene where a train's, like, you know, exploding and the tracks are just crumbling and the train's falling and they're running across train tops. And you know what I mean? Like, that, none of that stuff was in the book. The book chose to play it completely historically accurate and then just explain everything by saying vampires were behind slavery. And their whole point was, like, all the plantation owners were vampires. And they were just trying to... They were feeding off of slaves. And all the vampires were in the South. And, you know, like, when the Civil War happened, it was the North versus the South. South was vampires. North was humans. The book was really clever. It really was. But the movie just chose to be stupid.
All right, Tim.
Do you want to add to that?
I'm going to wait here. I'm going to hear what we have to say.
I think you've gathered that I think this movie is awful. I think it's terrible. It's laughable screenplay. Laughable script. There's nothing scary at all. Not in the slightest.
It's not supposed to be scary.
Well, vampires. I mean, a vampire movie, you'd think that there'd be some scares.
You think there are actually vampire movies out there that scare you?
That are sure. Bram Stoker's Dracula. That's a genuinely creepy movie. That's a scary movie.
I don't know. I mean, I never consider vampires scary. I consider them more like, I don't know, like they're like the equivalent of like like a swamp man or like, you know, a Frankenstein. I don't consider them scary. Just like they're just like classic movie monsters.
I didn't care for believe in any of the characters at all. What makes it worse is that the trailers I'm led to believe that the story would take place during Lincoln's younger years, and no, they have him fighting vampires in his 50s. Ridiculous.
The book did. The book actually spanned his entire life.
It may work for the book, but does not work in a movie.
Why didn't it work in a movie?
Why? I couldn't believe that a 50-year-old man could fight a vampire who has superpowers.
Remember my stepdad? My stepdad's a pretty burly dude.
50 years old is not like you're not in your deathbed, dude. 50 years old is not.
He looks like an older. He looks like an old 50.
All right, but will you at least give him credit on the makeup? The makeup looked good.
Sure, it looked fine.
I mean, compared to what's the Guy Pearce in Prometheus?
Oh, I think they must have spent all the makeup on him. On the Abe Lincoln character, because everybody else's makeup looked terrible. Their beards looked so fake. They looked like they were, pasted on terribly. It was awful. The score is awful.
Honestly, I'll agree with you there, because I don't even remember the score.
None of the action scenes were original or interesting. Maybe the Stampede set piece was mildly interesting, but it went on for way too long. How many fucking horses are there in the Stampede? It just went on forever.
Endless supply of horses.
Yes, it went on forever. It was boring. The train sequence at the end of the movie was confusing. I had no idea where people were or what direction they were headed because they must have switched the camera angle compared to the direction of the train and where they're walking towards the front of the train a number of times, which confused me. It didn't make any sense to me. Also, the movie takes itself way too seriously. There is not an ounce of yarn or tongue-in-cheek to it. In a movie like this, you expect it to be fun. You know, you expect it to be, oh hey, you know, wink wink. We're you know, hunting vampires during the Civil War. Ha ha ha. But no. It's way too seriously. I'll tell you what the most egregious thing that this movie does. It trivializes the Civil War. The Civil War is one of the most tragic events in our nation's history, and they treat it with such little regard for the real sacrifices people made. And they in place of the Confederate soldiers, they put vampires. That's all they do. And they don't even they barely even mention the tragedy of the slaves. You know, they mention, oh hey, we use them to feed on. But I mean, it's barely even given a passing glance of it's just.
See, this is. Let me just jump in real quick.
Yeah.
The movie featured the slaves like not even maybe 1% that they were featured. They were given total respect in the book. In fact, the entire book dealt with slavery. It had it didn't. I don't even think it went into the Civil War. I mean, this is one of those things that the movie added to add another action set piece, because the book didn't really feature the Civil War. It featured more about, it was more about Abe, his whole what he wanted to do in the book was free the slaves, because he knew that that's what vampires were using them for, not to pick cotton in the fields, but they were using them as blood banks. So the book mostly revolves around that, him freeing the slaves. I mean,
they barely focus on that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's mentioned in the beginning. I mean, there were characters inserted into the movie that weren't even in the book. His African American friend?
Yeah.
Not in the book.
Well, you gotta have a token black guy.
Apparently. I mean, for whatever reason, there's no friendship with I mean, not that it made a huge difference. I didn't mind that in the movie, but he wasn't in the book. It was just a character that was inserted.
There's only one major character that really dies, and it's at the end of the movie. And we're led to believe that this affects Abraham Lincoln so much, you know, that he screams out, "No!" You know, and it's, I guess, supposed to be this emotional moment, but the guy is just, I don't care. I didn't care.
Yeah, but can you be honest and say that you did not even really want to see this movie? You kind of, I feel like you're going in with an agenda. Okay. Like you just were ready to hate it.
No, okay, yes. I was not enthusiastic to see this movie. I thought the idea was somewhat interesting. I really did. The only thing that I was not interested in was because the trailers did not sell me. You know, it's something that I could have waited for HBO or whatever, you know, channel or maybe DVD. I don't know. But,
okay, now let me pose a question, because I was sitting next to you for both of these movies. During G.I. Joe, you practically have a hard-on in your pants.
Yes.
Thumbs up, giddy, smile
that,
across your
that
face.
That movie knows what it is. That movie knows its ridiculous premise.
Have you seen it recently?
Yes, I have.
Because I also watched it recently, and that movie is very similar to Abe Lincoln.
Oh, God,
in this way. Let me just finish. The movie, you say it knows what it is, but there are a lot of scenes in that movie where it tries to take itself very seriously. Everybody has like a very serious look on their face when someone dies, and oh my God, like, we got to be serious. And then, like, the very next scene will be like, hey, we're running around the streets in robot suits, jumping and shooting stuff.
Because it knows what it is.
Abe Lincoln had a lot of scenes that were outrageous. And also, you say there was no comedy in it, but there was a few times where...
No, I don't care about comedy. I care about not taking itself seriously. In every single moment of this movie, it takes itself too seriously. There's not a wink at the camera at all. Throughout, as you say, G.I. Joe, there are winks all throughout the whole effing movie. And that's what makes it so damn fun. In Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, there is nothing at all that makes you say, hey, we're having fun with this movie.
I don't totally agree. I think they're both very similar movies. They're both summer, like, popcorn movies.
Ugh.
Maybe Abe Lincoln's not as comedic. It doesn't have Marlon Wayans in it. But, I mean...
That would have made it a lot better. A lot more interesting, I can tell you that.
But I'll agree with you. The movie does fail because it doesn't know what it wants to be. If they would have played it completely straight like the movie, you guys would be complaining about it's too serious. But they tried to do both, and I think they failed. But if they would have tried to go all the way crazy, I think we would have been still complaining. Like, I don't think this movie had any way to win with us. Unless, for me, it would have won if they stayed completely faithful to the book. But I think with most audiences, it would have felt flat. They would have been like, wow, this is really... I feel like I was just in a history class.
What about the relationship between Lincoln and Mary Todd? No chemistry. No chemistry at all.
I wonder why Abe ages. It looks like he's actually 50 years old, but she doesn't look like she aged a day.
They put her hair in a bun.
Yeah,
that's all they do.
I mean, they're like, oh, we'll give you an older lady hairstyle, and that'll be enough. It was weird. Yeah. I mean, their relationship, like, the book really follows, like, their whole courtship. It follows Abe from, like, you know, from being a young man all the way to being president. And, like, all his little
In a movie
struggles.
Called Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, who the fuck cares about his relationship with his wife?
Well, people would be looking for that sort of historical relevance. Like, oh, this is... I guarantee
you... Who cares
you,
about that development of his relationship
you would,
with his wife?
You would find people... Like, people like me would care about that. Like, all right, so where does Mary Todd fit in
this? Did you care about it in this movie?
Well, I want to know when she was going to show up, because she had to show up sooner or later.
Did you care about it?
Yeah, because it has to show up sooner or later. That's very important. Like,
I mean,
in Lincoln's life, there's three things. He, his ascension to the presidency, mm-hmm. his presidency in the Civil War, mm-hmm. and him being shot. Okay. Those are the three things you need to have in anything about Abraham Lincoln, because mm-hmm. you already know how the story is going to end. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have his relationship to Mary Todd, then you're missing a key.
Did you get the chemistry? Did you like their chemistry?
No, I didn't like their chemistry. I didn't really like their chemistry at all. I mean, there's a lot of like blandness between the two of them.
Yeah.
So I mean, I'm with you.
There's a lot of blandness in the whole fucking movie.
See, I don't see that. Like, I loved every single time he picks up that axe and goes to fight a vampire. I was right there with him.
But you have to admit, it was shot so poorly. The action scenes are so damn murky.
The train scene, yeah, I agree, because it's dark. But I mean, I can still figure out when they were doing the axe passing back and forth to fight the vampires with him and his slave companion there.
Well, he wasn't a slave.
Oh, he's a freedman, but I can't think of the character's name off the top of my head.
Yeah, because it doesn't matter.
Speed's crashing a freaking carriage through the.
Once again, Speed, a movie that knows what it is, it does not take itself
seriously. No, the character's name is Speed.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were making a comparison.
He crashes the horse-drawn carriage to save Abe from having a chair put on him in the plantation house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Continue.
That was a lot of fun.
No, no fun.
I had a ton of fun. The only part that I had a problem with when he puts the axe in the box. When he's like, I put away childish things. At that point, I was like, all right, what's going to happen now?
God.
And then I got bored for the remainder of the movie until they pick up the axe again. I thought it was a neat touch when he picks up the axe, starts spinning it, and then drops it.
Oh, yeah, real neat touch. Wow.
That's a great touch.
You know what that was? A montage. Because this whole movie is filled with montages.
That's a great touch. Yeah. You know, he's like, he's older, he hasn't practiced.
Cliche is what it is.
He hasn't practiced, he drops it.
Cliche. Ah. Full of montages and cliches. Nothing original.
Jeez. I'll agree that the ending scene was... I mean, obviously it's completely green screened. It's completely CGI. But I mean, as far as it being dark, they're on a train, an old train, that kicks up a bunch of smoke. If it was completely clear, it would make no sense.
Still.
They're fighting literally...
The tone of... Also, during the normal scenes of this movie, there's this odd sepia tone that they're trying to convey how old it is, you know? That it takes place in the mid-1800s. It's just awful.
There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, look at Public Enemies that Michael Mann shot. Yeah. That movie shot digitally. Look how off that movie looked because it was shot digitally.
It didn't look off at all.
It looked completely off.
No, it looked
Are you
great.
Kidding me?
It looked great.
No way. Absolutely. You're telling me that movie had a great look?
Yes, it did.
Oh my God, dude. You gotta be kidding me. That movie looked horrible because it was shot digitally.
Amazing.
It was shot perfectly clear, HD all the way, and it looks terrible because
great.
Of it. Because the movie, and like, when did that movie take place? In the 40s? It looks horrible.
In the 20s.
Yeah, the 20s or whatever. It looked horrible. But this movie, if it looked completely HD, completely clear, it would look weird.
No, I'm not asking it to look clear. I'm asking it to look clearer.
There's nothing wrong with the sepia tone. I didn't think the movie looked ugly. In fact, I thought for some of the scenes, what they were, I thought they looked pretty damn good.
No,
the CG horses running. I didn't think that scene looked bad at all.
Oh, because it's during the sunset and the glare and the lens flares and the shadows.
That's
all...
what the sky looks like when the sun's setting.
I know,
it looks orange.
It looked bad. It was a bad setting, a bad scene.
I didn't think.
And
it
made
bad
the horses even look more fake.
I thought that was a pretty exciting scene. I thought the train scene was pretty exciting. Them fighting on top of the train.
Yeah,
like
that. Cleave the axe into the boards, swing and drop kick the following vampire.
Nope.
Really?
Nope.
You didn't like Axe Gun?
Axe Gun, no.
Axe Gun, not in the book, by the way.
I loved every... All of it. I just wish there was more of it in the movie. Especially that last quarter of the movie where there's nothing going on.
I guarantee
on.
You there's some sort of Axe Gun or Cane Gun in some old Kung Fu movie that Bekmambetov stole.
And yet, I love old school Kung Fu.
Sure,
Kung
they're
movies.
Great, because
and it's
they're
for these
not
reasons.
Serious.
It's for these reasons. And I wish that movie did take itself less seriously. That's probably my only real gripe, is that the movie does try to take itself too seriously.
Now, about the vampire rules in this film, never really clearly laid out. Obviously, they guess they can go out in the daytime. What about the crucifixes? What about stakes through the heart? And why silver? I thought silver was for werewolves.
No, I've seen silver.
Yeah,
silver's
a pretty common anti-vampire.
I liked how they explained
it. You say
true blood,
so is it a relatively new thing in vampire lore?
No,
it's been
I've
around
it
for a while.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, there's other things, too, that they don't bring into the thing, like running water or garlic.
Yeah, well, those are
also
minor
being, also being
what about
invited,
stakes through the heart? Why does it have to be decapitated?
In,
Why?
Because a stake in the heart only puts a vampire into torpor. It does not actually kill it. You have to actually behead the vampire to destroy it completely.
Well, it's not laid out in this movie. It is the rules of vampirism aren't really clearly laid out until that one scene that Hermano mentioned earlier about vampires can't kill other vampires.
That was the one main rule that they mentioned in the movie, but that's not even in the book. In the book, vampires can kill other vampires. In fact, that's Henry kills for himself. He doesn't like hire Abe as like his assassin or something. You know what I mean? His vampire assassin. Because I thought that was a clever thing in the movie, but that's not in the book at all. And it's just I don't understand. Like, the movie just couldn't decide what it wanted to be.
I agree. Because I think that's where the movie...
I think they tried to go halfway with both. They tried to stay somewhat true to the book and then try to do their own stuff that was off the wall. And it didn't really work. But I don't think the movie's as horrible as Tim is claiming it is.
It's terrible. I gotta say, I am stunned at Rotten Tomatoes. Not because of the tomato meter, which is at 36%, which I think is too damn high, but at the user score. I wanted you to guess what the user score of this movie
73%.
is.
73%.
I don't know, probably like around 75.
75%.
Yep.
Out of over 121,000 user ratings, 75% of the people like it.
It's not a bad movie.
It's fun.
It's like you honestly expect better than this from like summer movie. This isn't Oscar season, Tim. This is a summer movie.
Yes, I understand that. I don't expect this to be an Oscar-worthy film. I expect it to be a fun film. And the movies that you've mentioned before, and G.I. Joe, and I can think of other summer blockbusters.
Transformers.
No. Well, okay. If I was 9 years old, I would love Transformers. And that's fun. I can see where someone would have fun with that movie, even though I personally despise it. This movie, there's no fun in it. This movie should have been released at the end of January, the beginning of February, in Dumping Ground. It's so awful.
See, this movie, I think this movie starts off fun and then gets too serious for itself.
I think it starts off serious and ends worse.
See, no, I disagree. I mean, I think this movie is flawed, to be sure. There's also some really weird plot points, like when Abraham Lincoln is fighting the first vampire, the one that killed his mom, and for the first time, and Henry comes to save his bacon. Like, he can't put two and together. Henry just flung this guy almost into orbit.
Well,
he's unconscious at the time.
Is he?
Yeah.
I thought he
wakes up in his house.
Oh yeah, that's right. Because he does wake up. I completely forgot he was unconscious. But that was, I mean, that's still a pretty cool scene. Like, he throws him through a building.
Why is it cool?
Because you don't get to see that. That's,
are you kidding? It was a follow shot of him being just thrown through a building.
over the horizon line.
Oh, Tim, you have an agenda, man. Like,
I don't have an
agenda.
You
can't find a single good thing to say about this movie.
The horse throwing was mildly interesting. I did not have an agenda going into this movie. I just had relatively low expectations. And
even more peculiar that you're this offended by this movie. If you had low expectations, then you're saying pretty much that this is pretty much the worst movie you've ever seen.
The worst movie I've seen this year.
Even worse than Land of the Leapers?
I'm about to stab you with this pen if you say yes. Night of the Leapus was absolutely worse than this film.
Okay, Night of the Leapus is worse than this film, but I'll say of the movies that were released this year, this is the worst movie I've seen this year. And God help you, if you guys have this anywhere near your top 10 of the year, I quit the podcast.
Wow.
You realize what you're saying next to you, right?
Yes. The one who put a Serbian film in his top 10.
And Drive Angry Shot in 3D.
Oh, man.
Anyways. Can you imagine seeing this in 3D? I could never imagine seeing this in 3D.
I didn't.
It's so damn dark.
Well, I don't... Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be really hard to see in 3D. I mean, when we went to go see it, like, they're like, we're gonna go see the 220 show, and they're like, oh, it's 3D. I'm like, I'll skip it. Went to Ruby Tuesday's, grabbed lunch, and then came back. That's when I ran into you in the parking lot.
What was I gonna say? I don't know, because this movie just... Is there any point in mentioning spoilers at all? You want to go to spoilers?
I do.
All right, spoilers.
Okay, so basically, I'm kind of going to do spoilers for the book, because I just want to point out a few points at why the book is far superior. Okay. So like I said before, the book is very, very straightforward. I don't think either one of you guys would have liked a straight adaptation of the book, because it's completely straightforward. If you were to just erase all the vampire stuff from the book, it would be a perfectly accurate Abe Lincoln, like, biography.
Mm-hmm.
So basically in the book, where the movie I thought also failed is the end, where Henry pretty much is in the Oval Office with Abe Lincoln and he's like, hey, why don't you let me make you a vampire and we can continue doing this for the rest of our days? And I'm like, the only way that makes sense is if he wants a training partner. Because in the book, it's clearly laid out that vampires can't kill other vampires. So why make Abe a vampire if all he's going to be able to do is maybe train someone else?
That makes sense.
When Henry can perfectly well do that himself, he's going to live forever. He just maybe just wanted a companion. But in the book, there's no such thing. Basically, it goes right to the point at Abe's assassination. And it's revealed, this is a spoiler for the book, by the way, so if you haven't read the book, you don't want to, you know, the book spoiled, just stop listening. Give me a couple seconds. Okay, now. Basically, John Wilkes Booth is a vampire.
That makes sense.
That makes sense.
Funny that you say that, because what did I say to you in the theater?
Yes.
I leaned over to Hermano in the theater, and I say, dear God, does the movie end where John Wilkes Booth is a vampire? And Hermano just laughs.
I'm not even 100% sure that he was, but I'm pretty sure that he was. And this is why I know that Henry can kill vampires. Henry catches up with John Wilkes Booth and kills him. And he also makes Abe a vampire.
Because he resurrects him?
He resurrects Abe, and he makes him a vampire, and then they continue on going, fighting vampires.
Of course.
I thought that ending was way stronger. I loved the ending in the book because I didn't see it coming. I just thought, oh, Abe's going to get assassinated, it's going to just end, and Henry's going to be pissed off or whatever. But I really can't stress enough how good the book is. I mean, it was recommended to me. I was like most people. I just dismissed it on the title alone. But I was incredibly surprised at how good it was, considering what the subject matter is. And I recommend people check it out. I mean, give it a chance. If it doesn't grab you right away, you're probably not going to like it, because the beginning of the book is very indicative of what the rest of the book is going to be. But as far as the movie goes, I didn't hate it like Tim did. I thought there were some pros to it, more cons maybe. But overall, I don't know. I don't know that it's like a shit movie.
Okay,
so do you want to give it a grade?
You don't have anything else to mention?
I had fun with this movie. I just wish it had more fun in it.
I think the ending that you said, Hermano, could have made a rather interesting ending by revealing that John Wilkes Booth is a vampire and having what was his vampire friend name?
Henry.
Revive him and kind of walking off into the sunset.
The
or
book
something.
Pretty much ends right at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, it ends with Henry reviving him and Abe's a vampire.
That would have been mildly interesting, I guess. I don't know. It wouldn't have.
Also, I know you said they never explained in the movie, but basically vampires can go out in daylight because they use that powder that a lot of people.
You see Henry wiping that on his cheeks at the beginning of the film, but they don't mention what that is at all.
It's just that powder, like, you know, like the powder wigs, you know, judges or whatever would wear.
But he just wipes it on his cheeks.
Yeah, but he's also when he's talking, he's doing a bunch of other. He's flitting around when he's doing. He's like he drinks a drink and then he like fills with something else and he's looking for his shoes and he's just basically he's all over the place when he puts the stuff on his cheeks.
Uh-huh.
And that's why it's incomplete.
I mean, they only really needed to put it on their face and their hands, and then they have to wear sunglasses because or else they'll go blind.
So this past weekend, it earned $4.3 million. It's earned It earned $16 million on the weekend. Came in third behind Brave, which is the movie we should have discussed. And Madagascar.
Everybody's
3.
Doing Brave, Tim.
Yeah, but it's worth it. I should have mentioned that in my yay or nay. I'll say yay anyways for Brave. So I guess you want to do grades.
You can do a grade.
Romano.
C plus.
I give it a solid B. Because I really, I liked it. I just wish it was more. Like I wanted more action. That last third of the movie, where there's nothing going on until the train scene, that's when I was just like, come on, let's get on with this. Let's pick up the act. Let's go. Come on.
Yeah, that whole plot point with them gathering all the silver.
And that was cool.
Oh, God.
I wasn't like that in the book at all.
Like, I really
like
that.
Added this movie, I couldn't even think of a movie that was more unfaithful to the book.
And like I said, it's just egregious what it does and how it trivializes the Civil War. It's just awful. I give it an F plus because it does a good job at sucking. Pun completely intended.
So I got a B, a C, and an F.
A D plus? C minus?
C minus, yeah.
Sure.
C minus.
C minus average for Abraham Lincoln.
Very
Vampire
contested
Hunter.
C minus average.
What?
Very contested C minus average.
Yeah. Okay, that does it for this episode of the First Time Watchers podcast. You can find us on Facebook by searching First Time Watchers. We post movie news and updates that we think you would be interested in. You can email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com.
And you can follow us on Twitter at 1sttimewatchers@twitter.com. Speaking of which, we actually have a direct message from Upcoming Movies 001 at Upcoming Movies 001. And they asked us, hi, how are you? What is your favorite movie of all time?
I'll go first. I'll say Die Hard.
Top Gun.
Requiem for a Dream.
There we go.
What's
wrong with you?
So Tim is Die Hard. Wally's is Top Gun. And Hermano's is Requiem for a Dream.
Jesus
Hells
Christ.
Yeah.
Thank you, Upcoming Movie 001. And we hope to hear from you again soon.
Please download our episodes on iTunes. Also, feel free to leave a review. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. If you have any suggestions for movies for us to watch, send us a tweet, an email, or a post on our Facebook page.
We take requests.
Absolutely. Stay tuned for our next episode. We will be discussing The House of the Devil, and also stay tuned for a bonus episode in which we will discuss our top five movies of the year so far and our top five movies we are looking forward to for the rest of the year.
There we go. A mid-year report.
Hopefully Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter is not on any
of the I don't think I'll make my top five.
Thank God.
Let's see how the rest of the year pans out. Right. Anyway, First Time Watchers podcast, because we love to watch vampire movies.
No.
Yep. I forgot to tell you, I was downstairs talking to Romano, and there's a bike down there. I said, you know what we should do for one of our movies? We should re-review Rad as like a bonus episode.
Rad?
Yeah, Rad.
I don't think I've ever heard of
it. Oh, you ever saw Rad?
Rad?
No.
Dude, it was like a late 80s, mid to late 80s movie about like BMX, like you know, ramp biking and all that.
Why not?
And then we could do a double feature with like Rad and Gleaming the Cube.
Yeah.
He did bikes and skateboards from the 80s.
Gleaming the Cube, have you seen that?
I've heard of it.
You haven't seen Gleaming the Cube
Christian
either?
Slater in it?
No, I've heard of
it.
All right, you know what? There's two movies that are going to be on the slate for the next time I get to pick a movie. It's either going to be Rad or Gleaming the Cube.
But you've already seen those movies.
We're going to have to rewatch them. It's been a while since I've seen them. Young Christian Slater? Skitchin on
the
highway?
I can think of a lot of other actors at a younger age that are better than Christian Slater.
Tony Hawk's in it.
Do you know who the baddie is in Rad?
Tell me.
The same bad guy in Karate Kid Part 1, Johnny. Oh boy. Sweep the leg, Tim.
Nice.
So yeah, it's like an oracle. You get to see what's coming.
Fantastic. I can't wait. I'm so thrilled.
You're going to love it.
Yeah, right.
I have it on VHS. Just find a VCR.
we should all just get a VCR.
Go to a junkyard to find a VCR.
Just get VCR copies of it and just sit down and just watch it on VCR. Can you fix the tracking on that?
I'm just giving you the space to
all right, thank you.
Feel